This is the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. Here are your hosts, Justin Jarrett and Wes Kerr.
Hey, Loco Sports fans. Welcome to another edition of the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Jarrett, joined as always by Wes Kerr. And we are getting into a little bit of a transition here, Wes. The high school sports season has finally wrapped up, a season that we weren't sure we were going to have back in the fall, but we got through this thing, able to play pretty much everything to completion. And you had a great column this weekend just talking about all the great things that we were able to see in a season that almost wasn't. So that was great to reflect on all those things that we got to see this year. And we'll talk about a few of them here as the spring season has wrapped up, as well as some USCB news, some news on some athletes who are going on to the next level, as well as some who are excelling at the next level. And then we'll have an LPGA legend on the show. You had an interview with Rosie Jones, who has put together a really cool event for some LPGA legends coming up on Friday at Moss Creek. But first of all, Wes, it's been a week since we chatted on the pod. How are you holding up, buddy?
I am doing great.
It was a fantastic Memorial Day weekend here on Hilton Head Island. Just absolutely beautiful weather here on the beach and all throughout Hilton Head. Just phenomenal. Awesome to see that normalcy come all the way back here this summer. Definitely last year it was very different. Didn't have quite like the normal summer, but this time around, I think it's going to be very, very close to what we've seen in years past. So excited for this summer. But what a high school sports season it was, and just an awesome spring and an awesome year in general. Just crazy to think that we've made it here to completion after where we were a year ago with so much in doubt over the summer of 2020. Just so grateful to be very close to a usual lifestyle now with so many people getting vaccinated. But just what a year of sports here in the Lowcountry. And once again, really grateful to be able to cover fall, winter, and spring here. Just some amazing performances from so many here around the South Carolina Lowcountry. And we got some more exciting action on tap, including another PGA Tour event, our second one this year. Talk about just an amazing experience coming up here, the Palmetto Championships, nearly just a week away out in Ridgeland, South Carolina at Congaree Golf Club. I'm just so excited to see this amazing course over at Congaree and how the best in the world take it on, because we've never really seen it before. So it's going to be interesting to see their approach as they come in here and get ready for a tournament like no other. Get ready for a spectacular, spectacular week of golf. Going to be a heck of a show over in Ridgeland. And man, it's just been a fun past week enjoying this incredible early summer weather here in the Lowcountry. Just seems like every Memorial Day weekend, it's like 90, 95 degrees and just too hot. But this weather this week was just absolutely perfect. I've been doing some biking, skating, some golfing as well. Just a really special time of year as we kick off summer 2021 here around the area and around the Lowcountry. And, you know, even more so this year, it's going to be a blast in the anticipation of a second PGA Tour event coming to town.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. And it was great to see already the benefits of that starting to, you know, pay dividends with the First Tee and Congaree Foundation teaming up this weekend for a little event to get about 30 kids out there at the Sarge, which we mentioned it a couple weeks ago, but Lucas Glover, who was here for Media Day, kind of led the charge on a little fundraiser for the Sarge, the Sergeant Jasper Golf Club out in Ridgeland, and they raised about $15,000 through the Heritage, through a little fundraiser, Recharge the Sarge campaign that Lucas was heading up, and then Stuart Sink matched the funds that he had raised. So it brought the total to almost $15,000. And so it's great to already see those dividends. You know, that's part of what the PGA Tour does, is tries to give back to those communities where the events are played. And certainly we've seen that over the years with the Hilton Head and Beaufort County community and all the Lowcountry, really, with the Heritage Classic Foundation. And now we're seeing it with Congaree as well. So you hope this turns into a long-lasting thing. You know, obviously this is a one-off event, so we're not exactly sure what will be next out at Congaree, but certainly you see the excitement around that club, and the pros are excited about it. And, you know, having this opportunity on the big stage is definitely going to be a launching point for that club as far as big events in the future that will be able to contribute to that mission. So that's absolutely great to see. And like you said, the weather's been phenomenal. We were able to get the kids out to the pool a couple times this weekend, something we didn't do a whole lot last summer just because of the circumstances, but really nice to be getting things back to normal, like you said. And we'll have some all-star baseball and softball stuff coming up for the kids here in a few weeks, including some tournaments right here in our backyard. So we'll be covering that stuff during the slower summertime for sure. But first, let's talk about the wrap up to this high school season, and lots of baseball and softball action this past week. Unfortunately, it did not turn out the way we hoped for our local teams. Buford falling in game three against James Island in the Class 4A baseball lower state final, and Colleton County dropping a couple of games to Darlington. I was at the first one. It was really a heartbreaking loss. And then they had the lead in game two and couldn't hang on. So unfortunately, we were hoping it would go one more week for baseball and softball season, and we didn't get that. Fortunate, but man, it was a great run for both of those teams.
Absolutely. A really tough ending for Buford in that decisive game three, but what a job to push it to that final game, and what a fantastic season for that resilient Eagle squad. And, you know, I thought they needed to take game one on Monday at James Island. They had a big chance after Hogan Gardner's kind of pushed the game two. Stephen West on the mound, they fell behind early, but a really resilient comeback like we've seen so many times this year. And Oliver Holmes, a huge base hit in that game, attacked the first pitch he saw, drove in a couple runs. Rogue Wallace scores in the pass ball to tie it, but then Hogan Gardner still comes through with leadoff double in the sixth, and that ended up being the difference in the ball game. And James Island ended up holding off the Eagles in this contest and nearly blew in a pop-up collision in the shallow outfield, but shortstop able to hang on to get the opening game victory. Then what a performance by the Eagles in game two to push it to a decisive contest on Friday. Just fantastic work by James Davenport on the mound. He went the distance and he really saved his best inning for last. Just so cool, calm, collected in a tie game. 1-2-3 inning to retire the Trojans before that 110 pitch count limit. And Buford, you know, they needed something big on offense. They were looking to win the game. They had that bases loaded, nobody out opportunity squandered in the last inning. And man, that has a way to just bring your whole team down. You don't score a run off of that. And then Davenport, he comes right back at the plate and he gets that leadoff single to really push the momentum back into the Eagles' favor. They get a runner to second on a balk with two outs. And William Winburn, the hero, walk-off line drive through the third base side, just perfectly executed. Phenomenal piece of hitting by Winburn. What a day that he had over there at the plate to get his team to that game three. Just an amazing moment for him and that Eagle squad winning a playoff game, lower state championship game two at home. Just really impressed by the fight that team had. They took down Hogan Gardner, who just threw a no-hitter in his last start. I mean, that is just phenomenal going against that ace of the James Island staff. He has just been on fire this whole season, but Buford able to take him down. I'm just so impressed by that offense. Buford just not giving in, coming back and getting the job accomplished. And then Davenport, just an incredible job on the mound to help force a decisive game three. Unfortunately, just a really tough one. Got to give a ton of credit to James Island here. They took advantage. They got on Wes Graves. He's had just an amazing season, but some control issues to start off. Walked a couple guys and got behind in counts. And, you know, props to James Island for taking advantage and hitting some balls out of the ballpark to surge to an early advantage. They scored 7 in the first inning on 2 home runs. Buford, they definitely battled. They cut the lead to 8-3, a 2-run homer by Rogue Wallace. But Trojans, they blew it open at the top of the sixth and ended up with a run rule win 14-3. So just a rough start doing them in here in that game three. Feel bad for Wes Graves. He had an amazing season. They wouldn't have been here if not for his performance in that game against May Rivers. So fantastic season for Graves. And just so proud of this team. I mean, they've overcome so much adversity along the way this year. Just a fantastic accomplishment to get to this point. Only 3 other teams get to the lower state and upper state championship series. So really fantastic season and just incredible in every way here for this Buford Eagles squad who have overcome so much. This was such a tough region. And getting to that point, get second place, finish in just a very, very, very tough group of teams with James Island, May River, Bluffton, Colton County, Hilton Head, the Seahawks. I mean, they had some talent too, and it still wasn't enough against a really, really fantastic region. And, you know, Coach was very emotional. That's a tight-knit group. Those kids spent their childhoods together. It's just really sad to see it come to an end, but they put together just an incredible season. What a year for Region 7-4A baseball. I mean, the Trojans earned that one. They are strong on all sides, both pitching and hitting, and just really impressed by their clutch hitting in that decisive third game to blow it open and take control, and especially Julius Reynolds, who set the tone with that leadoff homer in the clinching game. I mean, James Allen has an incredible assortment of talent on that squad. Hogan Gardner, talk about Reynolds. They got some potent bats all across the lineup. I really think they have a great chance in that state championship series starting today as we record on Tuesday, June 1st. So good luck to James Island and bring home a state championship to the Lowcountry.
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. You know, we talked all season that May River had the pitching, Buford had the bats, but James Island was really the most well-rounded team. And I think that really showed in the playoffs. You know, they've been able to win 2-0 games and also put up a bunch of runs when they needed to. And again, with Wes Graves, that guy pitched his tail off throughout the season and especially in the postseason. And it's a shame to see that he just didn't have it, you know, in the biggest game of the year. But you have to think that the workload probably started to weigh on him a little bit. He threw a lot of pitches in the postseason and probably wearing down a little bit. And when it starts going bad at the start, it can snowball pretty quickly, especially with a team with as much offensive prowess as James Island. And they're going to have a tough test this week against AC Flora, but it should be a great series. And, you know, they've been battle tested. They've faced some really solid squads. I loved hanging out with that Buford team and covering them in the postseason, getting to know those guys a little bit better. I already knew a few of them, of course, especially Ollie Holmes and Rush Riley and those guys who have played multiple sports. But it was fun to sit down there by the dugout and cover them and get to know those guys a little bit, because definitely a lot of personality in that dugout. They were a fun team to cover, just like May River was, just like Hilton Head was. And you hate to see it end for them, like you said, especially with so many seniors on that squad. But that game, too, was just a phenomenal baseball game. Much like the first game of that district championship against May River. We just got to see some really high quality baseball from our local kids, which is really awesome to see. And same thing at softball, Colleton County. The atmosphere there was fantastic, just like it was at Buford, just like it was at May River. And it was a heartbreaking loss in game one. They really thought they had won it. I thought they had won it. It looked like they had turned a double play to end the game. And, you know, from my angle, I couldn't tell, but apparently the first baseman was off the bag, was trying to find it and couldn't find it to get that last out. And then Darlington ends up scoring a couple of runs to take the lead and hangs on and wins, and then rallies to win game two to knock out the Cougars, which their first two losses of the season. I mean, that's just devastating for those to both occur in the lower state championship game, but takes nothing away from the dominant season they had, the outstanding campaign, and man, they've got a lot of young talent. Obviously, Whitley Weathers was carrying the load, but, you know, people like Shandy Brown, who's just a freshman, you know, I could go down the roster and name a bunch of underclassmen who contributed to that team. And, you know, I think what we've seen with both Colleton Prep and Colleton County, you know, there's going to be a pipeline that's bringing in more players, because they know what they're doing up there in Colleton County. They're developing some serious softball talent.
Softball at Colleton, both Colleton County and Colleton Prep, and just a tough ending for that Cougar side, because, man, they had just an exceptional season coming into this lower state championship series against a really tough Darlington team who just battled, and they knew they were never out of the ballgame, and they just kept fighting all the way to the end and pulled out a pair of fantastic wins. So really, congratulations, got to give some props, and really, really proud of what Darlington did, but as well as Colleton County, just a tough way to bow out after what an amazing season for this Cougar team. And, you know, I thought they had in the bag in game one. We all did. It looked like a double play, but just didn't get the call and a tough play. And Darlington scores to take the lead. And then in the bottom half, bases loaded, nobody out. Winning around second, but Falcons, they pull out and escape to hold on. That's a tough one for Colleton County. I mean, that's the way it goes sometimes. And really, really fantastic team of softball. Unfortunately, Colleton on the wrong side. Grounder force at home, a strikeout, and another ground up. Just a tough way to drop the opening game. And then they're up 4-0 game two at Darlington. And then the bottom of the fifth, a couple of singles help load the bases. And then Nia Jones, just an unbelievably clutch play. Bases clearing triple, just turns the game completely on its head. And then error and a double just evaporates that whole lead entirely. So, and the Cougars, they just couldn't find the answer after that. Just really clutch hitting from Darlington when they had their chance. And, you know, that's what it comes down to, playoffs. It's about who can take advantage of their opportunities when they go on top of their game. And, you know, when Darlington finally found it in the fifth after getting just one hit off of Whitley Weathers in the first four innings, they took advantage and won the game in the series. So, once again, props to Darlington for their fight, just coming from behind, and they knew they were never out of it, and they delivered in the big moments, and that's what it takes to win a playoff series. Got to bring your game when it matters the most, and Darlington was able to do that. It's just tough because both of those games could have easily gone the other way. It could have been a sweep for the Cougars, and, you know, just those minor details in the playoffs, that is what determines the winner, but it doesn't take away from the amazing season this team had. an 18-0 start and just two losses all year, both coming to Darlington in a very challenging region. You got some really strong teams, and you talk about the talent there with May River, girls like Anna Carabello, you even talk to like Parker Ray, Hilton Head Island, Reagan Marchant. You got some spectacular softball talent all over here in this region. So it was a remarkable accomplishment to see that record and see them just stay consistent and getting the job done. And in the playoffs, it's hard to go in there after, I mean, Hilton Head Prep boys baseball, they knew it as well. I mean, going in there after that dominant regular season, it's difficult to keep that going into the playoffs. I mean, teams are going to want to get at you. And we saw that firsthand a couple times this season, but what a fantastic year for college and county softball. Whitley Weathers was just unbelievable. She gave it her all every game. She's heading up to Francis Marion to continue her softball career. What a fantastic year, as you said, for softball in Colleton. Fantastic softball season all around here in the Lowcountry, but man, they're doing something special over in Colleton.
Yeah, Weathers will graduate, as you mentioned, as well as Shamori Overton and Sydney Howard, but they do have a ton of talent coming back. Shandy Brown, a freshman, Michaela Chisholm, a sophomore, Bailey Cox, a freshman, Maggie Kennedy, a freshman, Mackenzie Pullum, a sophomore, Jordan Slocum, a sophomore. So they're going to have plenty of firepower back. They'll have to develop a new pitcher, obviously, because Weathers did all the work there. Bailey Cox listed as a pitcher, so you assume she's the next one up in the circle, unless they have someone else coming through the pipeline. But certainly they're going to be able to swing the bats with anybody and should be solid defensively behind whoever's in the circle. So we look forward to seeing them have another great year next year. And keeping it on the softball side, buddy, Bailey Wignes, the head coach at USCB, no more. She is heading to the D1 ranks, going to Gardner-Webb. And, you know, I think when they hired her a couple years ago, you probably could have predicted that it might be a little bit of a short-term thing just because she had the D1 pedigree, played at Arizona State, had been coaching in the D1 ranks as an assistant. So, you know, USCB understands its place as kind of a stepping stone. And at a place like that, you have two choices when you make a big hire. You can hire somebody that you think is going to be a long timer, or you can hire somebody who you think is going to give you the best they've got for a few years and move along. And I think they knew that Bailey Wignes was probably going to fit into that latter category, that she had aspirations above coaching at that level, that she was going to try to get to the D1 level. And certainly we congratulate her for this opportunity she gets at Gardner-Webb. And, you know, I think she leaves the program on solid footing, as it has been really since its inception. The program really hasn't had any down years. So, you know, I think it's an attractive job, especially with the transition to D2 coming. I think they're going to bring in a high caliber of candidates, and whoever takes that job is going to inherit a strong roster and a strong program that's been built over the years, first by Ty Rekovich, then by Laura Heberling, and now by Bailey Wignes. So, you know, I think the future is still very bright for USCB. And I think the work that Bailey's done is going to help them get another great candidate, and perhaps with the move to DU2, someone who may stick around a little bit longer.
Yeah, I agree with all that. And congratulations to Bailey on taking the next step as she becomes the coach of Gardner-Webb. And, you know, I was just so impressed by her commitment and her drive starting on day one at USCB. I mean, she had that hunger to push that Sand Shark team to their best possible play every day and every time they took the field. So, I mean, she's a former national championship 2011 at Arizona State. She knows the elite and she knows the culture of putting together and cultivating a championship team. And we've seen that firsthand here at USCB. And what a run to start it off. Her first year back in 2019, she won the first 19 games of the season. That is just incredible. And then she won the Sun Conference Championship. That is an amazing, amazing feat. 78 wins over 3 years. That includes the 2020 season that was cut short. Just an outstanding job by Wignes. I'm just so excited to see what she does at the Division I level. She's got all the qualities to be a successful coach, and I think she can make it all the way to a really top-tier job in the years to come at the highest echelon of the sport of college softball. So we wish her all the best. We thank her for the incredible work she has done for this program. Certainly has left it a lot better than she found it. And, you know, I think it's going to continue to be that springboard job, as you said, as these coaches look to continue their journey on their career. But it will be an intriguing position, even more so with the move to D2 and coming, as you said. I'm sure they're going to be looking for someone who kind of has that vision to recruit well and help establish this team on this new level of softball and build on the vision that Wignes established and, you know, build up a new identity as they transition to that higher level. So Certainly an important hire coming up. I'm interested in seeing the future of this program, and I definitely think it will attract a lot of strong candidates coming over here to USCB softball.
I think so too, and it'll be interesting to watch that unfold. And speaking of USCB, they wrapped up their track and field season with another great performance at the national championships, had a couple more All-Americans. Great work out there by Bernard Gaither, who is a great friend of mine, wonderful guy who's done tremendous work with that program. And Ayanna McKeever with another great performance, taking home All-American honors. And then Shamar Deacon also with All-America honors. Great to see USCB succeeding on the national level always. And track and field seems to be an annual contender in that regard. They've always got national champs or All-Americans, it seems like, every year. And, you know, you have to give a lot of credit to Bernard Gaither for the way he's been able to recruit, especially regionally right here, you know, in the Lowcountry and Coastal Empire, as you would call it, over in the Savannah area, and then just developing talent. He and Sarah Turbiati, who ran cross country and track at USCB a few years back and then joined the coaching staff, they've really put their heart and soul into developing the talent that they have, understanding, you know, their place in the recruiting pecking order, and understanding that you're not going to get the ready-made, ready-to-go people who are going to be national champs or All-Americans out of the gate. You're going to have to coach them and develop them into that. And I think they do a fantastic job of that. And certainly, you know, this year's results certainly bear that out.
I mean, this program is in fantastic hands with Bernard Gaither at the helm, and really great performance once again for the Sand Shark group and the NAIA National Championships last week. And what a season for both Ayanna McKeever and Shamar Deacon. They both earned All-America honors. McKeever got into the 100 meters and the triple jump, where she has been excelling all season long, and seventh in the 100, a remarkable fourth place in the triple. So what a way to cap off an incredible season for McKeever out of Statesboro, Georgia. And then Deacon, Shamar Deacon, putting a big meet together as well. Eighth place in the 400. He earns All-American honors, 48.06. That's a tremendous time for Shamar, and also was part of that outstanding relay, finishing in 10th at the 4x400 with Mel Obadiah Jr., Sam Williams, and Kadari Mitchell. That group was phenomenal. That relay kept taking home medals and titles all season long. Broke a couple school records this year and put together another solid performance with a top 10 finish in the national championship. And individually, Mitchell, 17th in the 200, 24th in the 100. So a pair of strong sprint finishes for Kadari. Obadiah with a top 10 of his own in the 800. So really impressive season out of these stars. Another fantastic year by Bernard Gaither and this track program. You know, he does it all the right way. As he said, from recruiting to developing, everything is done in the best way. And once again, just a fantastic season on the track for USCB, and an amazing season altogether in the spring for the Sand Shark athletic program. We saw baseball and softball do some great things. Baseball make it to the NAIA tournament. Softball competing well in the Sun Conference. Golf, we saw that Dawson Peters did. They made an at-large bid to the NAIA tournament. And then women's soccer also putting together a solid showing, getting far in that Sun Conference tournament and breaking some records along the way. So fantastic season for USCB Athletic.
Yeah, no question. And you know, just like with the high school season, great to see them just get it in. I mean, that was victory number one, was just getting to play. You know, I think they did a great job with that. I talked a little bit with our friend Gina Montford out there about the work that they did working with the conference and, you know, meeting weekly to talk about what's working, what's not working, what do we need to do differently. And I think they did a fantastic job of managing that and keeping their teams on the field. Even the Sun Conference even competed in the fall when a lot of conferences did not. They pushed it off to the spring. So great work by all involved, and in a tough situation and able to get through that season, always a good thing. And we're certainly happy to have seen them get to compete this year after, you know, the spring season got shut down last year. So, and keeping it on track and field, we've got a former Loco star. She's now starring outside the Loco. Tori Herman from Hilton Head High lost her senior season last year to the pandemic. And then she went on to Kentucky, in the University of Kentucky, where as a true freshman, she is breaking school records, and she is going to the national championships, NCAA track and field championships out in Oregon after a phenomenal performance in the 1500 meters. And Wes, you're working on a little feature on Tory, and we've been talking to our friend Blake Bishop about why she was just one of his favorites he's ever coached. And I think the answer is pretty apparent because of the work she puts in and the way she competes. I mean, a true freshman breaking school records at a place like Kentucky and going to the national championships, the sky is the limit for Tory Herman. And Blake Bishop says, keep an eye out for her in 2024 because he's planning on buying a ticket to the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. I think she has a great shot of competing for a spot on that Paris team in 2024. And I'm just so proud of what she's done already in her freshman year at Kentucky at a big-time SEC school. This is just incredible. She qualifies in the 1,500 meters for nationals. Not only that, but she shatters the program record, the phenomenal 4:14.12. She beat the existing mark by nearly a full second as a freshman. That is just unbelievable what she has already done over at a big-time school. And you know, she knew she had the motivation after losing that senior year of high school. Coming and do this is just extraordinary. And, you know, I remember in 2017 what she did as Blake Bishop was telling me. I mean, she won a state title nearly single-handedly that year. I mean, she was part of a group of just five girls, and they took home the state title. And they would not have been close without the accomplishments of Tory Herman in that meet. Just an amazing competitor, just with the drive to outdo anybody, no matter the challenges that she faces. She will come through, and just an incredible, special athlete, and has a future as bright as can be. So I can't wait to see what she does over in Eugene this coming weekend. She has taken the college track sport by storm. Just impressive in all that she does. Incredible work ethic, just an amazing drive to succeed and get to the top already here at the college track and field level. So we're going to have a feature coming out about her in the next few days as she gets ready to compete on the biggest stage in college track at the NCAA championship. So what an awesome story this is. Congratulations to Tory Herman. So much more to come from her.
Absolutely. And speaking of our Loco student athletes going on to the next level, a couple more signing last week, and we've been buried with all these signings this spring. We're going to be catching up with some features on some of these student athletes who are going on to the next level here in the coming days and weeks. But two guys that we really enjoyed covering in numerous sports, John Paul II, Jeremiah Young, and Malone Kennard-Heusinger signing to continue their athletic careers in college. And it's going to be Jeremiah Young playing football. We weren't sure which direction he would go with that. And Malone going to get the chance to play basketball. Excited to see what these guys do at the next level, and happy that they found a home.
I've really enjoyed watching both of these two outstanding athletes play at the high school level, and what an opportunity for both of them over in college. And Jeremiah Young's going to be heading to North Carolina Wesleyan for football. What an amazing senior year he had last fall for the Golden Warriors. A really tremendous dual threat quarterback. Showed impressive resiliency all season long. They're coming off a winless year back in 2019, but just put on an extraordinary year in 2020. And it was all started with the amazing play of Jeremiah Young at quarterback, probably the best breakout star that we saw this past football season over in the Loco. I mean, he had an impressive arm, and he just ran over defenses. Just amazing speed and agility, incredible. And then so many big spots throughout the year, bounced back from that winless season in 2019, finishes off with that big win for VA, and nearly led in the playoffs. Just came up very short, so almost beat Hilton Head Prep at home. That was the difference, but an incredible year for that John Paul II program. It all started with the outstanding play of Jeremiah Young, and he's going to have fantastic shots the next level, either as a quarterback or as a skill position player, and whatever spot they kind of decide for him to see fit. But he has a variety of skill sets that I think are really going to help the battling Bishops thrive this coming season, and going to do some great things at the next level. Really, really fantastic athletes over at John Paul II, Jeremiah Young, and alongside him his teammate, Malone Kennard-Heusinger, who those two hooked up several times, either on the gridiron or on the basketball court. And what a dominant post presence and then a rebounder he has been for that Mac Tamanen squad. And he's going to make his way to Randolph College in Virginia Division III, the Wildcats. And I think he's going to strong shot to battle for a big, significant role in this lineup. When you look at that frame and the athleticism that he showed throughout his high school basketball career, he's going to be a tough competitor to hold down in either end. I mean, his play over down post in the paint that we saw several times. So as a Golden Warrior, it was very, very difficult to stop what he was trying to do over there. And looking forward to watch Malone Kennard-Heusinger as well as Jeremiah Young, a pair of phenomenal athletes. They really put in a ton of work to that JP2 athletic program, and going to be a bright future for both of them in their new homes. We wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, and as we say almost every time we talk about signings, especially at smaller schools at D2 or D3 or junior college level, it's not really about, you know, where you end up on the hierarchy. It's about finding the right fit for the right individual. And, you know, there's a lot of things that go into that. And I think one of the most important things to remember is that the student athletes all have different priorities. You know, some of them want to be a part of that big time program, whether it means sitting on the bench or being on the scout team or whatever. And others just want to be somewhere where they can play and contribute and go to school. And, you know, they have to weigh those different priorities and find the right fit for them. And, you know, certainly playing college sports at any level is an incredible accomplishment and a great opportunity. And it's great to see these guys get that chance. So, you know, whether it ends up being what they hope it is or not is always yet to be seen, but to see them get this opportunity and hopefully see it lead to great things for them and being able to get their education while continuing their athletic careers is always something to celebrate. And we certainly always do that. And we hope that those guys do well and go on to big things. And once again, we got a great segue into another guy who went on to big things from the Loco, and he maybe went to a little lower level than some people might have expected him initially, but you never know where that's going to end up. Dee Delaney, former Whale Branch star, you know, he went to the Citadel out of high school, a step below the big time D1 level, one double A as old guys like me know it, or FCS for the younger people. But then he wound up, you know, he got his degree there, went on and as a graduate student played at the University of Miami and got an opportunity in the NFL. He's kind of bounced around a little bit, but he's going to get another shot at the league. He has signed with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Super Bowl champions, and he is, you know, going to get a chance in training camp with those guys, and we'll see if he can make the roster. But anytime you're still kicking around, keeping yourself in good enough shape to get that invite to training camp, that is a great thing. And it's great to see Dee Delaney still pushing ahead and trying to make it in the league. If you look at, you know, one of his friends and mentors from the Buford area, Ron Parker, it was a lot of the same kind of thing for him early on in his career. He bounced around, was on some practice squads, had a couple years where he got dropped by one team, picked up by another, and eventually he caught on in the right place at the right time in Kansas City and became a starter and key contributor for the Chiefs for a number of years before he just retired last year. But, you know, maybe this will be the big break for Dee Delaney, that he will find the roster that has a good fit for him and he'll be able to stick in the league for a while.
What an amazing opportunity this is for Dee Delaney, heading to Tampa Bay, home of the defending Super Bowl champions, and what a chance he's going to get here to make an impact. And no better place to play right now than down in Tampa. And he was signed by Jacksonville after that really solid college career, going from the Citadel over to Miami. He wore the turnover chain a couple times down in Florida, saw some action with the Jags. As he said, he bounced around to the Dolphins, the Jets, and Washington. And now he is headed to the Bucs to team up with that incredible defense. And I think there's really an opportunity at corner on this unit. And I think he's got a shot to become a guy they can turn to. And the Bucs, they've wanted to upgrade that secondary alongside the talent they have and guys like Antoine Winfield. And, you know, maybe Delaney can work his way up with a strong training camp, but I think he's been more likely of kind of a depth acquisition, possibly a special teams guy. But, you know, we've seen his work ethic before, and we've seen what happened with Parker, as you said, over there in Kansas City. And it's certainly not out of the question that he can make his way up to becoming a reliable piece of that stellar Tampa Bay defense. And I mean, this is just an amazing opportunity for a guy that has certainly deserved it. He has just worked so hard all the way coming from Whale Branch over to the Citadel, going to Miami, going through a couple of NFL rosters. And now he gets an amazing shot at a potential Super Bowl ring. Tampa should be a strong favorite this year. Got to be exciting for D getting this opportunity, and you never know when it could be your last shot. So I'm certainly sure he's going to take advantage over here as a member of the Tampa Bay Bucs. We wish him the best of luck going forward into this new season.
No question. We're looking forward to that. And that means football season is just not too far away, Wes. We're going to have a short summer with everything pushed back a little bit this school year. So we'll be at it very soon, getting together those high school football previews and getting ready for the Friday night lights in the Loco. Well, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk a little Loco golf with some LPGA legends coming to Moss Creek on Friday. We'll be right back with more on the Loco Sports Lowdown. Hey, Loco Sports fans. Are you looking for a way to keep the kids entertained, active, and out of your hair this summer? You should check out the summer camp program at Coastal Gymnastics Center in Bluffton. Their brand new facility is second to none, and they have a fun lineup of weekly themes for their four-week camp this summer. For $35 per day or $120 per week, kids ages 5 through 12 can attend daily from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and they'll get top-notch gymnastics instruction, as well as time for snacks, lunch, crafts, and structured games. Register today at CoastalGymnasticsCenter.com and go Loco! Hey Loco Sports fans, if your resolution for 2021 was to get your fitness in order, you've got to check out the New Year, New You program at the eFit Club in Bluffton. Their fitness and nutrition program, combined with their unique eGym format that provides a personalized workout, will get you back in top form in no time. You've never seen a gym like this. And when you sign up for just $149 a month, you'll get a full membership plus all the New Year, New You benefits. eFit Club in Bluffton. Change your fitness. Change your life. Hey Loco Sports fans, when you hear Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, think advanced, local, and specialized therapy care. The team at Horizon prides themselves on the diversity of their 30-plus specialized treatment programs, including advanced sports medicine and orthopedic care, as they offer the area's only Alter-G treadmill and have an indoor heated resistance therapy pool. For nearly 15 years, Horizon's outpatient, physical, occupational, and sports medicine programs have been addressing the needs of athletes, weekend warriors, and their fans. At any level, at any age or stage, their specialized therapists and athletic trainers are ready to get you back in the game. Visit HorizonRehabilitation.com for more information or call 843-671-REHAB. That's 843-671-REHAB. Horizon Rehabilitation and Sports Medicine, proud sponsors of LocoSports.com. All right, Wes. Well, teased it before, but we've had PGA Tour galore here in the Lowcountry this year, and now we're going to have a little bit of LPGA action, bringing some legends out of retirement, so to speak, to play at Moss Creek. And this is a unique event because Rosie Jones, whose name would be well known to anyone who followed the LPGA a while back when I was growing up, they're going to know a lot of these names. And Rosie Jones is a resident at Moss Creek, and she has put together this phenomenal event to bring a bunch of LPGA Tour stars of yesteryear out to the links at Moss Creek on Friday. And you were able to catch up with Rosie and talk to her a little bit about the event and what's going on. So fill us in, man. What can we expect on Friday at Moss Creek?
Yeah, this is going to be a fun event
over here at Moss Creek. And we've got some amazing PGA Tour action coming up this month, as we said. But we also got a nice showcase coming up from some legends on the women's circuit, including the great Rosie Jones, who I got to talk to. And this is just awesome to see these amazing women take part in this event. And it's also kind of a tune-up for them for the U.S. Senior Women's Open coming up in the summer in Connecticut. So I think this Moss Creek course is going to be a great test to help prepare these top-level golfers for that big event. It's also an awesome opportunity to see some of these best senior women's golfers in the world compete right here in the Loco. And I think these women are really excited to get back at it after a long time being away from action due to the pandemic. So this is going to be an amazing event coming up on Friday. Let's hear from Rosie Jones, now the host of the event and a 13-time LPGA Tour winner right now on the Loco Sports Lowdown Podcast.
Thanks for doing this interview, by the way. And
you're welcome.
A couple months ago, you know, the Legends Tour schedule was pretty much canceled last year because of COVID. So a lot of us haven't played any competition for about almost a year and a half. And our first event, really tournament this year, goes right into the U.S. Senior Women's Open up in Connecticut. And about a couple of months ago, the idea started to swing around our tour about, you know, trying to get little pods together in different parts of the country where people live and, you know, try to get some little games going, you know, 10 or 15 girls show up, throw some money down and go out there and play just to kind of get the juices rolling again and get some competition in, get the heartbeat going. And, you know, I thought that was a great idea and I was really happy to try to put one together. So just about 3 weeks ago, I secured a date at the club here at Moss Creek where I live and started putting the word out to Legends Tour players that lived close by, like Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Tennessee, and you know, just put a list out there and then opened it up really to the entire tour, just in case somebody might have been in this area. And right now we have 17 players. And once I started talking to my friends about it, was able to pick up a couple sponsors. One is Newsletter Station, and the other one is Morgan Stanley, financial advisor from Atlanta. And so we were able to sweeten the pot up and actually make it a nice, really one-day tournament with a good purse. And that was able to attract a few more players. And so we've kind of turned it into a really cool event. Moss Creek Golf and the club and the membership has gotten really behind it. We're able to find private housing for all the players to try to save some money. And it's just morphed into this really cool thing because, you know, there was a few of us, maybe about five of us that played here back in the 80s when Moss Creek Invitational.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And kind of going off that, you mentioned the history over here at Moss Creek. Tell me why you chose this course to host the event and tell me about the history that's been here around this area, that Moss Creek Invitational.
Because of the Moss Creek Invitational, it started, I think, in 1976 and went to like 1985. And when I first got on tour in 1982, it was one of the tournaments that I'd come to, and it was really my introduction to Hilton Head. Eventually, I moved to Hilton Head in 1985 and lived and bought my first home in Hilton Head Plantation, but moved to Atlanta in 1990 because of a little bit more easier to travel out of. Eventually, I knew I was going to move back. And when I did, we fell in love with Moss Creek. And so we've been living here almost 10 years, full time for about 5 years. We built the house right here on the golf course. And so that's why, of course, you know, given the history of the LPGA being played here and, you know, Moss Creek being my home course, I definitely wanted to bring an event here before some of the other golf courses in the area.
Tell me more about the specific course and what we should be looking out for as we get closer to the tournament.
Well, we're playing on the South Golf Course, which is the same golf course we played when we were playing in the Invitational back in the early 80s. The golf course is playing nice and dry. You know, we're in a little bit of a drought here. And so the fairways are running out a little bit and the greens are rolling perfect. Most golf courses are starting to aerate and plug their greens and stuff like that. And that's why we picked this date as we did, because they're getting ready to do that shortly after our event. But we have 17 really awesome players coming to the event. Hall of Fame member and past champion of the Moss Creek Invitational back in 1980, Paula Stacey will be here. And we also have players like Nancy Scranton, Val Skinner, Chris Cheddar, Tammy Green, Jeanette Kohlhaas, Wendy Doolin, a really good lineup of LPGA players and champions and Legends Tour winners. We're really excited to, you know, have been able to get such a good field and really looking forward to the play.
Yeah, tell me more about some of the competitors in this field and about some of their greatest accomplishments.
Well, of course, Paula Stacey, I don't have my notes right in front of me, but she is in the LPGA and World Golf Hall of Fame. And she has, I think, 35 wins under her belt, including three majors. Next would be probably Nancy Scranton with 6 wins on the LPGA and 5 on the Legends Tour. Val Skinner has 6 wins on the LPGA. Several players have more than 1 wins on the LPGA and, you know, just all have been very, very active on the Legends Tour the last 10 years. And, you know, like we said, we're getting ready. We're just trying to put in some competition rounds before we show up at the US Open, because we know how, you know, hard they can put those golf courses. USGA really sets up their golf courses really tough and they don't take it easy on senior players. So we're trying to get ready for that.
And you mentioned some details about the Moss Creek course. Tell me about the biggest challenges that it presents as you prepare for those big tournaments in the future.
Well, that's what's so great about Moss Creek is even though it's a flat golf course, it's very tight with the big oaks and pines that line the fairways. You really have to be in control of your golf ball, and it's not all about distance, but positioning in the fairways and for your approach shots to the green. The greens are all very small, Fazio designed golf courses, well bunkered, and can have some really, really scary pin placements if the superintendent wants to give us the real test. So, you know, a lot of people in the area know that Moss Creek is really one of those really, you know, quaint and kind of sneaky, tough golf courses, both the south and the north. And we're just really excited. I'm hoping that there's a little bit of wind wind on the back nine, because we're out there on the marsh and the wind can really make those par threes and approach shots on the par fours coming in really tough.
How awesome is it to get back to competition, get back to these tournaments after a lot of time, a lot of events canceled and a lot of time off during the pandemic of last year?
You know, it'll be really great to see all these gals. We've known each other for probably about 40 years, probably since college. And, you know, half the fun as a senior player is to just get together and have fun reminiscing about some of the years gone by. But I tell you what, we're all still very, very competitive. And when the bell rings, we're all out there for the prize. So it's going to be really good. I know there's going to be some good competition. I was just down in Florida a couple of weeks ago and had a round with one of the gals, and we both shot 3 under. Of course, we don't know very well. So I know that people are out there practicing and getting ready to play.
Yeah. Tell me more about the relationship and the bonding between you guys and how it's kind of grown each and every one of you, and also helped grow your love for the sport.
Well, you know, like I said, we've been competing against each other since college, and we have, you know, and that's a good 40 years of competition on the LPGA. And then as we retired, playing on the Legends Tour, we have been through so many great accomplishments with each other, you know, the great ups and downs of life, having lost friends to various illnesses, watching other families grow, having children, and then becoming grandparents already. And so it's, we are like a club, and we really cherish the opportunity to still play this game at a competitive level. And so many of us, you know, give back to the game in a lot of different ways, whether it's teaching or mentoring, you know, working the games, you know, still working with tournaments and playing. So I mean, it's been a full life for most of us. And, you know, even though it's a more of a, not, I wouldn't say a part-time job, because we have to, you know, we have to work at it every day to keep it going. It's a little less vigorous than it was when we were on the LPGA, but we still love every single minute of it.
One more question for you. It's been a fantastic spring and going into summer so far. And for golf in the low country, of course, we have the RBC Heritage, we have the PGA Championship in Kiawa in South Carolina, and now we get a really special treat in June. We get the Palmetto Championship in Congaree Golf Club. So, and what you will be doing coming up here early in June. So what does it mean to host this event? And how awesome is this to really put some big names out on the golf scene, especially here in 2021?
You know what? We're just really proud to have been able to put this together. And I can't thank my sponsors, Newsletter Station and Morgan Stanley, and as well as the Golf Club of Moss Creek. Their board, their golf staff have been absolutely wonderful in helping put this together within three and a half weeks, because, you know, restrictions are just lifting. And, you know, we weren't able to do this 2 months ago or even try to plan something like this. So everybody has gotten really behind it. And I couldn't be more proud to be hosting these wonderful players here at Moss Creek.
How do you hope this will grow the game of golf, especially women's golf in the low country?
Right. Well, you know what? It's been since we have lots of college tournaments, women's college tournaments in the low country, and lots of different, you know, amateur events for the juniors. I've been going to a lot of different events the last couple of years because I mentor a couple of young players. But to bring the senior tour back to Hilton Head is just really cool, because it gives a whole different element. A lot of people used to follow us when we were on the LPGA, and they were wondering where we were. And this gives us the opportunity to say, hey, we are still here and we are still knocking the ball way out there. Come watch us play. And I wish we were open to the public, but that lives in Moss Creek, then call them up and get an invited guest to come out and watch us play.
All right. Good stuff, Wes. And you know, as Rosie talked about, there is a great history with Moss Creek and the LPGA Tour. They actually played a tour event there from 1976 to 1985. You know, Nancy Lopez is definitely the female golfer that I grew up idolizing, or, you know, seeing as the top of the heap, and she won it a time or two. They also had Hollis Stacey was a champion there, and she'll be in the field on Friday, along with Val Skinner, who is someone who I met a few years back when I was working at the Island Packet. She had a great fundraiser event out on Dufusky Island that I had the opportunity to cover and be a part of, which was a really cool event. Great person doing great things. So a whole list of great players from the LPGA annals of history are going to be out there on Friday at Moss Creek. So very cool to see that. The field has collective 65 LPGA Tour wins, numerous major championships. There's a bunch of Hall of Famers and former Solheim Cup players. So a very cool event, and just another great example of the embarrassment of riches we have when it comes to golf here in the Lowcountry.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be some exceptional talent making their way over here to Moss Creek for this amazing event. And, you know, I'm excited to see how it goes here this coming Friday. And it's going to be a ton of fun. And as you said, some great talent in this field, and just going to mean so much, as Rosie said, after COVID played such an impact into losing kind of the opportunity to gather and compete against each other the last year and a half. So this one's going to be more special, I think, than ever before. And it's going to be a heck of a test going into a challenging test this summer at the U.S. Senior Women's Open. So excited for this amazing group of women to get back out here at Friday at Moss Creek. There's been some amazing history, as you said, on this golf course. So going to be a really fun Friday over here in the Loco, watching some phenomenal senior women golfers compete here at the Legends LPGA event.
All right, Wes. Well, that is just about going to do it for this show. We always end with our teams and players of the week. And unfortunately, our teams went 0-for this week. We didn't have any advance, so we'll skip that. And our players of the week will look a little bit different because we didn't have too many teams competing. But who are your athletes of the week? I'll let you take the first shot.
Yeah, I'm going to go for my final boys player of the week this season. I will pick James Davenport from Beaufort High. You know, I mean, the season was on the line. The ball was in his hands in game two of that series against the James Island Trojans, and man, he delivered seven incredible innings of work. He limited a really strong James Island offense, just two earned runs, which is a heck of an accomplishment. And then he started off the win rally in the bottom of the seventh inning to win the ball game and send things to a decisive game three. I mean, you talk about coming through with everything on the line, and he was nearing that pitch count with it, but he just kept believing. It's difficult when you get up there and with your pitch total and trying to use that last remaining effort you have and empty the tank to try to help your team finish it off, or at least give your team position to win it in the bottom half, and gets done with a remarkable performance. 1-2-3 inning, just a team effort really in that win over James Island, but it would not have been possible without the phenomenal work of Davenport in that ball game. And then for my girls athlete of the week, I'm going to head over to the USCB and pick Ayanna McKeever on track and field. What an amazing special season that she had for the USCB Sand Sharks. Absolutely sensational from start to finish. We kept saying her name all season long, kept writing about her because she was just incredible. She really picked up momentum from that amazing indoor campaign, won two Sun Conference Athlete of the Week awards, and then she carried over to the outdoor part of the season. And what a way to finish it off. Two NAIL American honors in the 100 meters and the triple jump. Really incredible speed and athleticism that we've seen this season from McKeever, senior out of Statesboro, Georgia. She took fourth in the triple jump, just missed the podium. She's really elevated her performances all season long from beginning to end. What a way to cap it off. So impressed by McKeever and all of this fantastic Sand Shark track and field lineup, but what a season for McKeever. My final girls player of the week in the 2020-21 season.
Excellent choices, despite the slim pickings this week with not too many teams competing, but I will follow your lead to some degree. I'll go for my boys athlete of the week. I'll also go to Beaufort baseball and go with William Winburn, who you mentioned came up with a game-winning hit in game two, just jumped on an inside fastball, cranked it down the third baseline to walk it off, and then just stopped between first and second and waited for his team to come celebrate with him. That was great for us photographers. We were able to get some great shots of the celebration, so that was good stuff. Winburn has been a joy to cover. I mean, a great football player, great baseball player, and really good interview after the game too. So, you know, I've enjoyed watching him compete. I'm not sure if he has aspirations to play at the next level, but certainly he's a outstanding athlete, a great picture of what you want a high school athlete to be for sure. Over on the girls side, I'm also going to go to the track, and I'll go with Tori Herman, who we already talked about at great length, but anytime a true freshman walks into the SEC in track and field and starts breaking school records and going to the national championships, you've done something really special. And like we mentioned earlier, it's really great to see her have that success at the next level after losing her high school senior season of track and field. And she's been standout on the cross country course and the track for Hilton Head High for a long time. And you'll be able to read a lot more about her in Wes's feature coming up later this week before she goes out to Oregon to compete in the national championship. So William Winburn and Tori Herman, my athletes of the week.
William Winburn, I mean, he came up clutch in the big time moment. He kept the season alive. And, you know, that is one that he's going to remember for the rest of his life. You know, he's one of those guys who just always turns it on in the biggest moments when the lights are the brightest. he comes through and gets it done for his team. So congratulations to William Winburn on a memory to remember forever and an exceptional season for the Buford Eagles. And then Troy Herman, what an accomplishment. You know, when you shatter those program records as a freshman, you are a special athlete. And you know how much it felt. It was painful to lose that senior season. We saw it for all of our spring athletes last year in 2020. So it just means even more for her. And she was determined to show up big in her freshman year at Kentucky. And she has already delivered with a new program record in the 1500 and a trip to the NCAA Nationals. Congratulations, Tori. Congratulations to William Winburn, our final two players of the week for the 2020-21 season.
All right. Congratulations to all the high school athletes on their success this season. That's a wrap on the 2020-2021 high school season, but we'll have plenty of other coverage coming up for you this summer, including those all loco teams, some features on some student athletes moving on to the next level, as well as coverage of those Dixie baseball and softball all-star tournaments coming up. So check out all of that on locosports.com and here on the podcast. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, go Loco.